You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we want to welcome you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading a podcast after this one, because I don't know that anybody really wants to hear more about it, but we're here to talk about it no matter what. The Boston Celtics losing to the Toronto Raptors 118-92, 118-92, after being outscored 36-13 in the second quarter. Another disastrous quarter for the Boston Celtics, and we are going to talk about it. We are the Raining Jays. I am John Corrales, beat reporter for MassLive.com, joined today by Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Jam.
Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam.
Jam!
We're going to try to have some fun with this. If you're a new listener, thank you. Welcome aboard. Thanks for checking us out. All right. Well, we're just going to kind of wing it, because that's what the Celtics seem to do. Just wing it. You know, oh, great first quarter. Good first quarter. Celtics up two after one. Yeah, good enough. Good enough. The second quarter was this one of those. Nothing went right. It seemed like at the beginning of the quarter, they were still playing hard at the beginning of the quarter. And they weren't hitting shots. They only hit 4 of 15 shots in the entire quarter. So a bunch of stuff wasn't falling. And Toronto was hot. They hit 14 of 25 shots. They made their run. And it seemed like Boston just quit in the second quarter. Like, they just said, oh, here we go again. And it just cascaded. When Marc Gasol hit that three to put them up 39-34, I thought Brad Stevens should have called a timeout. And he didn't until they were up, until it was 43-34. So 4 points later. And I'm not going to say that calling a timeout at 39-34 would have made a difference, but you had Marcus Smart yelling at Jaylen Brown. You had a bad foul. You had some bad stuff happening there after that Marc Gasol three. I feel like if he had called a timeout there, maybe he could have settled the team down, get a couple of baskets. You get a couple of baskets there and you tie the game up. Maybe that changes the momentum of the game and it doesn't quite go the exact same way.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, the offense just was bad to start that quarter. Gordon Hayward missed two pretty open threes. And that's when Gasol came in and he did just a nice job. He was like pretty much single-handedly responsible for the 9-0 run that the Raptors started there with two assists for three, and then he had a three himself. But then it went from like missing shots to just general fuckery. I mean, Marcus Smart had some of the worst turnovers I've ever seen, just throwing the ball to no one.
Yep.
You had the Jaylen Brown charge, which I think he just like lost the ball going up. I think he was trying to pass or trying to do something with it, but it looked bad. Then they started just yelling at each other. And then there was just no fight to get it back. Like, where was, even when the starters returned, there was pretty much nothing there. Like, there's no Kyrie trying to take over. There's nothing. Like, Al Horford started missing a bunch of like kind of easy mid-range shots that we normally see. There's just, the fight was not there, and then it just turned into sloppiness and turnovers galore. And you just can't lose a quarter by 23. You just, and expect to win the game. It was I don't know what to say at this point. Like, I thought after the Bulls game, my rationalization is like, oh, this is a flip the switch team. This is a team that's going to say, we're going to only try against the good teams and we're going to be able to turn it on. But clearly they showed no fight here. They're like, actually, I'm not going to say that. They showed a little bit of fight to open the third quarter. They cut it down to 16. Al Horford missed a pretty open three that would have cut it to 13. And then it seemed like, oh, and then on the course on the other end, Kawhi Leonard hits basically a contested three. And then it was like, okay, we tried our one punch. It didn't let us back in the game. And after that, it was pretty much over. And then, like, I just don't know, like, what to say at this point. I can't even blame Brad Stevens for this because eventually, like, they're professional basketball players. It's up to them to try. It's up to them to, like, play correctly. A timeout, what is he going to tell them in the timeout? Try? And then they're going to magically listen to that? It's just their will, their crispness. They're just talking about body language all night on the broadcast. It was pathetic. It's no bueno.
No, it's not. Interesting quote from Brad Stevens, who says, it's not like we don't know what we need to do. For some reason, we take too many shortcuts. And it's just interesting. We want to assign blame. That's what we always do. We want to assign blame. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? And blame somebody for this thing. Because it makes us feel better. At least we know who to point the finger at. But it is everybody. It's Brad. It's the players. I mean, these are professional basketball players. At some point, you got to be able to go out there and play with some level of pride and not just say, it seems like they just in the second quarter said, well, here we go again. And they just stop. They just stop. And is it on Brad? Like, does Brad need to start benching people and just play at that point? Just take people out and put Semi Ojeleye in and put Daniel Tyson and put Yabu in and say, fine, if you guys don't want to play, these guys are going to play. What does that accomplish? Does that send a message to these guys, or does that further alienate guys? I don't know. I know people's reaction is to be like college and be like high school and pull the wholesale substitutions. But when Jim Boylan did that in the Chicago Bulls, everybody was losing their minds. They're like, you can't do that in the pros. Now the flip side is, well, Chicago's playing a little bit better now. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. I don't know if Brad Stevens needs to just start benching more than one guy. Everybody wants to blame Terry Rozier, and I certainly have done plenty of that. But like,
this is not on Terry. This game's definitely not on Terry. You know? If anyone, it's like there's a lot of other players who played poorly. Terry Rozier was not taking dumb shots. He's actually, for those two Gordon Hayward threes I mentioned, I'm pretty sure he would have gotten the assist on them. I thought he played a decent game to start. I don't know. He's the favorite scapegoat of the team because of pass play, but Marcus Smart was really bad tonight. He had like a little bit of stretch at the start of the third, but he had so many bad turnovers. He was a minus 25. Horford didn't make any shots. Kyrie didn't show up whatsoever. Like, he started out the first quarter with three assists and then pretty much just didn't try and score the rest of the game. Mook Morris took 14 shots, which is kind of insane. I don't know. It's on everyone, but it's definitely not on, not on Terry. There's so many other players.
Yeah, I agree. It is. It's on a lot of guys. Marcus Smart. We talk about this for a second here. Marcus Smart, I've said for a long time now, is might be the team's best passer. Like, he's an exceptionally good passer, and he's never been given the full credit for his passing. The past, we can make it since the All-Star break. His passing has generally been subpar, and he's making some wild passes. He's making some really poor decisions with his passing. He's thrown some just like there was a turnover tonight where the ball, it just didn't have enough arc on it, and
he tried to throw to Jaylen Brown in the post, and it was the most ill-advised, terrible pass I've seen him throw in a while.
I don't know what's up with Marcus Smart's passing lately, because he's usually so good, but over the past couple of games, and I think probably into the Milwaukee game, I have to go back and look, but it's not been great, and not all the time, but he's had some really bad turnovers, definitely against Chicago. He had some really bad turnovers. I actually was looking at the box score, and it looked like they had him down for one, but that's in no way correct. He had some turnovers that really, it's just not been good. I don't know what the box score says. Let's look at tonight's box score, because it says for Marcus Smart on the night, he shot Marcus Morris. 1 of 5, 1 of 2 from three, minus 25. How often is Marcus Smart the worst plus minus guy on the team? That never happens.
The antithesis of Marcus Smart.
I don't, and it seemed like in the start of the third quarter, he was going to be the guy to get the Celtics going. Like, he had a steal and he hit that three, and it seemed like we're going to Marcus Smart our way back into this game. But no, like, it was a bad performance from Marcus Smart.
It was just general shittiness all around. And it's like on the defensive end, on the offensive end, and at some point someone has to, like, other than Mark, like, it felt like a lot of Marcus Smart's mistakes are from him trying to do too much and trying to, like, kind of impose his will on the game. But I at least give Marcus Smart credit, because I know I never once questioned his desire there. But at some point, you're paying Gordon Hayward $30 million a year. You're paying Kyrie Irving upwards of $20 million a year. At some point, you want them to try and make an impact on this game. And, like, they just – it felt like Hayward – I think we're kind of used to Hayward being a little bit passive. But it felt like Kyrie was passive tonight, and there was just nothing they could do. There's no solid thing that the Celtics can turn to right now when they're, like, when things are going poorly. It's not like they have a play or a lineup or anything that's just like an automatic success. And I just, like, normally you think that would be like maybe a Kyrie Al Horford pick and roll, or just getting the ball in Kyrie's hands and trying to do things. But tonight it was just like you kept on looking for answers, and then they weren't there. I mean, sometimes it's going to be the 3-point shooting, but tonight was the culmination of the Celtics just not playing well, and then the Raptors shooting basically 50% from three, and the Celtics shooting 20% from three, 6 of 30. I mean, it's just when both of those things happen, it's an equation for a terrible night of basketball, and that's what this was. But just like they try, like I thought they actually got some decent looks from three. It is no one's shot was falling, no one was in rhythm, there was no goodness at all. Basically, once the second quarter started.
We're going to take a break right now real quick. When we come back, this team has gotten Brad Stevens to do the unthinkable. Swear. Talk about that and more when we come back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Jason Tatum was called for a pretty weak technical foul. And so he gets an offensive foul called on him. And as he's walking away, he just kind of waves off the ref. I knew as soon as he waved off the ref that was going to get called a tech. And it was. And Brad Stevens yells down to JT Orr, who was the ref. If you hear the clip, he wasn't yelling to Jason Tatum when he said JT. He was yelling at JT Orr, saying, "Hey, air punch. If he loses his mind, it's one thing, but he waved at you." And then apparently I'm going to assume that JT Orr said something about everybody seeing it. And Brad Stevens said, "Oh, everybody saw it. Fuck. Who cares?" And if there's any bright spot in this, a fun spot in this, it's that Brad Stevens, we saw that he swears. He's just like the rest of us.
Is that going to do it for the folks who are like, "Oh, Brad Stevens needs to get angry at this team"?
That's it.
Is that showing it? Because, like, I just think this is the first time we've heard Brad Stevens on tape swearing, but I'm pretty sure he does this just the majority of the game, especially over the last 7 games where the Celtics have basically been awful, except for against the Bucks and the Sixers. But I can't even take that much joy in hearing Brad Stevens swear. Like, you think this would be a great moment for everyone, but it's just no. The Celtics are earned it this night, but like. I don't know. I was just everyone wants Brad Stevens to show emotion, like that's going to be the solution to the Celtics' problem. I was like, oh, we got it tonight, and they still got their asses kicked. Yeah. It's not like a Brad Stevens swearing. Like, we've heard so many stories of, like, oh, Brad said some choice words for them at halftime, and that's a fun story when they have a comeback win, but I don't know. I'm sure he did the same exact thing he did in those games. It's just at some point the team needs to step up, and I try to practice sports optimism, but it hasn't been fun. There's no more fun for watching the Celtics.
Well, here's the question, and why I bring up Brad Stevens and this whole thing. It is when we see Brad Stevens swearing on the sidelines, which we don't see. I'm sure he does it all the time. I mean, he's a normal person. We joke about the aw shucks, but he's a normal person. This team is, I don't know, you want to call it a crossroads, you want to call it whatever.
Is this bottom? Have they hit bottom?
I don't know. This might be. It might be bottom. It's hard to say. It feels like there's been so many bottoms. It's like, it's every time they hit the floor, it cracks open and they fall another floor. They have hit this stretch coming out of the All-Star break is, if we want to call it bottom, we can, because it was supposed to be the beginning of, like, this is a significantly tough stretch that's coming up. This was the beginning of the final stretch where we're supposed to be kicking it up. This was supposed to be the time where the Celtics were like, okay, the All-Star break, it's passed. Now we've got to get serious. And what happened? They lost the tough game to Milwaukee. They played well against Milwaukee, and they lost. They had an opportunity to win that game, and they lost. Then they come out against Chicago and just shit themselves. And then they come out against Toronto and have a similar thing happen where they play well in the first quarter, and then they just forget. They just stop. They quit. Is this the point where they have to have their own come to Jesus? They play the Trailblazers on a back-to-back. And despite my alma mater, Emerson College's best efforts to trap those guys in an elevator, they got out. This is where the Celtics, if they're going to make a move, if they're going to do anything, like, this has to be where they respond. This has to be the thing that makes or breaks their season. Like, there has to be a point here where they say, well, you know what? Enough of the bullshit. We're going to come together as a team somehow and figure this out. Or this is the beginning of the downward spiral and they just never get it back, because it's hard for me to believe that this team is just going to flip a switch in the playoffs at this point. Like, I'm as optimistic as anybody. And I do believe that the playoffs are a different animal and they provide the ability to rest and game plan and make adjustments. And that does change the equation a little bit. When they have this game in front of them against Toronto that it's right there for the taking, and they just stop playing in the second quarter, they can never get it back. There has to be something within them that says, all right, we have to at least figure out, we have to at least play hard. Like, if you can't at least play hard, forget about wins and losses. If you can't play hard for 48 minutes against the Trailblazers, if you can't come out and play hard for 48 minutes against the Trailblazers, then what are you even doing?
Do you think this team likes each other? Like, it's the like playing hard. It feels like a major motivation for doing that is like, I'm playing for the guys around me. I want to be like responsible to my teammate here because I don't want to be the guy who lets everyone down. And there's a lot of talk tonight, at least on the players only broadcast, of the team just not looking like they enjoy playing with each other or like really like each other. There's been a whole lot of talk with that Kyrie versus the young guys and everything like that. It's like, we talk about this team coming together, but if they don't really enjoy playing together, I don't know how much hope there is for them to like have this miraculous kind of comeback.
Yeah. You know, we see them, I see them in practice and they all seem to get along. Like they're in their post practice shooting contests. Everybody seems to get along. Like when you have these little glimpses into the locker room, there's nothing that tells me that they don't like each other. And maybe they're not all, you know, hanging out after practice. I mean, it's different teams have different dynamics. This isn't like the Sacramento Kings where they're all dancing on the sidelines. But I look at these guys when they're not post loss, like when they're just shooting around or going through practice or whatever, they seem fine. I don't see guys being frozen out. I don't see guys like not talking to each other. They break out into different groups. Like Gordon Hayward and Semi Ojeleye are always doing their own shooting drills. And then the other group, like Al Horford's always on his own, just doing his own thing. The other group is usually Kyrie, Mook, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Like that group always has like their 3-point shooting contest. I don't know why Hayward and Ojeleye are doing their own kind of, they do a different kind of drill. Like they do their own different contest. It's not the same contest. I don't know if that means anything. I never thought it meant anything. Everybody seems to be fine. So I don't know. Like, I get what they're saying, and I get how it looks, but that's my very long answer to a simple question. There's nothing that has ever indicated to me that they don't like each other.
I'm just searching for answers because we see the post game comments, and it's like Al Horford's just talking. It's like we lack urgency sometimes, and for some reason we're not fighting. And Marcus Smart's just saying like for some reason like we just don't have it in us. We're not giving the effort. And I'm just grasping at straws here for trying to come up with a reason for why the effort's not there. And I understand that, and a lot of criticism has come for Brad Stevens talking about him coaching a team with expectations versus him coaching the underdogs, and the underdogs are so scrappy and things like that. But are expectations really going to make it so you don't put in effort? It doesn't make sense to me. So maybe the fact that it's like it's not a cohesive team and it's difficult for the guys to play together, but you're right. Like I've been in the locker room too. Like the guys seem, they're frequently laughing. They're having a good time, joking around. I don't think there's any like real, I mean, I don't know personally, like they could probably do a good job of hiding that. There's like real animosity between the two players, but I don't know. I'm just grasping at straws for why effort and cohesion and try basically just plain lackadaisical seems to be a continuing problem for them, because I had initially bought into the thing of like they can just turn this on, but now it's like you have to be completely skeptical, because this is a game where you would imagine that this the switch was should have been on for this game. You lose to the Bucks in a close game, you get waxed by the Bulls, you have to flip the switch on for this one, and so to come out like that in the second quarter just doesn't make any sense to me. Nothing makes sense to me right now.
No, that's true. There's nothing that makes sense. It's just watching this game. There's I don't understand. I really don't understand how they go from looking so good, moving the ball, playing together, and then it stops. That's the thing. Like they have stretches where they do it and then they just stop. And I don't understand why. And it's up to everybody there, including Brad Stevens, to figure out why. I always put a majority of this on the players for the most part, because you're the one that's out there and it's up to you to try. If you're playing, if you're sulking for some reason, if there's something that you don't like, well, then fix it. Then talk to somebody and figure it out, but fix it. It's if you're not trying as a professional basketball player, that's on you. Like this is big boy stuff now. This is the coach can only do so much, and Brad Stevens definitely has to figure out the lineups. Maybe lineup changes could be the thing that that trigger something. But this isn't college. This isn't 35 games where you play once or twice a week and the coach can come in and give you like a little bit of a rah-rah speech that you come like he can't do that. Brad Stevens doesn't no coach comes in before every game and gives a big rah-rah speech. You can't do that 82 times. And Not only that, you can't keep doing that year after year after year. There's only so much you can say to these guys before you start repeating yourself. And if you're just out there repeating yourself, then guys start to say, like, yeah, yeah, I know. So it's hard for a coach to be the motivator. And I know people see the coach, well, you're supposed to motivate these guys. At this level, you're supposed to motivate yourself. Like, that's... it's not up to the coach to hold your hand and go through. Like, if there's an issue, you guys got to work it out. And it's up to the coaches, all of them, to be – if it's not Brad, if it's one of the other guys, then they have to figure it out. I don't know what else to say other than they have to figure it out, or else this will go down as one of the most, if not the most, disappointing season in Celtics history. Like, with all of the promise – for them to be here at this point, even though they're good, even though they still have a very good point differential, and even though they still have a pretty good record and all of that stuff, they're trending in the wrong direction. Why don't we take a break? We're going to come back. We'll get into some tweets. I don't know if there's a junk drawer to be had, but we'll figure something out to end the show when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Every day we ask you to tweet us with the hashtag #RainandJays during a game with comments. If it's just a regular day and you have a question, throw it at us. We'll try to get to it on the podcast. Hashtag #RainandJays, RAININJS, no G in there, #RainandJays. Or #RainandJunk if you have a goofy thing to say or share or joke to make. We'll do that too. Not a lot of people sharing anything with us with the hashtag here tonight. I think everybody's just pissed off, and it's hard to get a grasp on everything, but at Kalela _Sam, is Aaron Baines the most valuable Celtic not named Al Horford? You know, not having Baines hurts, and it's hard to say. I don't know, but it's possible that they need Aaron Baines more than anything as part of that second unit. Like, they need that tough bastard back there to kind of be the energy when Al Horford's not on the floor. And maybe this is just a road thing. Maybe they look especially bad on the road and they can't turn it around because they've looked good at home. So who knows? But that makes it even worse. Maybe having Baines back, like, Baines wouldn't quit like they quit tonight. Like, I don't think if Baines was out there, like, he might just punch one of his own guys to get them going. So, yeah, maybe a healthy Aaron Baines changes the entire dynamic of this team.
I mean, maybe. I think he certainly will help things on the defensive end. We saw Tice get pretty much buried tonight, and Brad went away from him real quick. But it still doesn't, like, I think it solves their things defensively. It certainly gives them more attitude. But on the offensive end, it's not like Aaron Baines is the answer. And I thought they really struggled in the second quarter to score points, and that's kind of led to the collapse. So I definitely think he'd bring up the energy and the kind of the effort. But if you're really looking for Aaron Baines to kind of turn this thing around, I think the problems are much bigger than Aaron Baines.
Probably. It's hard to put it on one player, but. Let's see, at Trainer Ryan 22, any sort of explanation why this team completely disappears for quarters at a time? I know it's been asked. I feel like it's necessary to discuss again after the second. Well, that's been the entire podcast. So shout out to Trainer Ryan. We don't know. Who knows? At Maddie B0814, I can't wait to hear how John puts an optimistic spin on this team right now. They've completely quit. Let's see.
Calling you out for being an optimist.
I know, right? Like me looking at the bright side of things. I love like sports and fandom. When you tend to look at things on an optimistic side, you get called out for being like too optimistic. But all right, here, let's see. The optimistic side to this is they can't get any worse. All right.
Yeah. I mean, oh, I can turn that optimistic side of it. It's still the playoffs. They still have like a, like they're still a talented team. They can still find a way to put it together. They clearly didn't flip the switch tonight, but you think they have a capable of doing it. We saw them play well against Milwaukee. We've seen them play well against the Sixers. We've seen them play well against the Raptors at home. They have 20 games to figure it out, and the playoffs are an entirely different beast. So at the end of the day, like it's things are not trending in the right direction, but the season is definitely not over. Absolutely. I mean, the playoffs is not like completely changing. And at this point, there's no real difference for them between the 3 seed and the 5 seed. Like, to me, yeah, it would be nice to have home court in the first round, but I think no matter who they play in the first round, if they are the 5 seed, whether it be the Pacers or the Sixers, the Celtics should are plenty capable of winning that series. And then they're going to be on the road to play a Raptors team or a Bucks team, depending on seeding. And that's going to be tremendously difficult for them. But if there are any, like, there's no way they're going to be able to kind of pass them. So at this point, like, I don't think this, they've played so poorly that seeding no longer really matters. So whatever they need to do to figure it out, it's more about like a psychological thing now than like just winning games. But the kind of the flip side of that is winning games is probably the best thing to do for their psychological makeup.
This gets us into the Kona King Kahuna. Will the season turn around in the playoffs, or do you see a first-round exit? No, I don't see a first-round exit because I see the Celtics playing the Sixers in the first round, and I have utter confidence in the Celtics beating the Sixers. So, and that goes to your point. So, and this is the optimistic spin on everything, that even if they end up the fifth seed, it really doesn't matter because they can win in Philly. They've shown they can win in Philly, and I feel confident in a Sixers series if all 7 games were in Philly. That's how confident I am in a series against the Sixers. So, and then after that, they're on the road anyway. So, yeah, I'd like to see them rise up to the third seed. Of course, for our own mental stability, I'd like to see the Celtics win and get up. They've got 2 more games against Indy. That if they win those 2 games, then they still have a good chance of climbing up to the third seed. That still exists, no matter how bad this loss was and how bad Chicago was. There is still that possibility. It exists. And the Celtics do have it in them. They do. It's just the frustrating part is that the stuff that they're doing wrong is so fixable. It's so fixable. It doesn't make any sense. So the playoffs, you're right, are a different animal. You play one team, you play them 7 times. There's at least a day off between games, sometimes 2. There's no crazy travel. You can make adjustments, and the sense of urgency raises the stakes. Like tonight's loss, in all actuality, in all reality, doesn't mean much basketball wise. They are still 5th in the standings. They are still matched up with Philly. It doesn't mean a whole lot. They've beaten Toronto before, and so they we know that they can beat Toronto. So the losses are more our own. Like it makes us feel like crap. It makes us feel very confused. So yeah, basketball wise, things can change. So if you want the optimistic spin and the playoff spin, that's how it goes. At Jovian's Shadow, we're not making shots. We're not rebounding the ball. We're not playing well. I don't care what Kyrie says. We will make it past the first round of the playoffs if this keeps up. That's just a extension of the conversation that we're having. At Celtics Boy, Tito just came out and played angry in the end of that third quarter, and I love it. Just shout out to Terry Rozier. And Funky, at Funky_Celtics, why doesn't Brad call timeouts in the middle of a position or possession if it starts to look bad like he used to? I think he does still do that. But, yeah, he does still do that. He did it against He did against Philly most recently that I remember. My question about timeouts is, and my biggest criticism of Brad Stevens is that he still lets runs go too long when it comes to calling timeouts. That going back to that second quarter, after Marc Gasol hit that three, and it was a 9-0 run, that was the time to call the timeout. That's the time to settle guys down and come out and change the energy. Even if you call timeout, make a sub, or call timeout to calm guys down, just change the energy. Brad, I feel like, still wants these guys to try to figure it out on their own, and this team, this group, is not capable of doing it in these moments. So when it comes to Brad Stevens and the timeouts, I want him to be more proactive in stopping these runs and getting these guys refocused, because if anything, they need to be refocused. And any level of them trying to figure it out, you just can't. You have to take control of that situation. And that's my biggest gripe when it comes to Brad Stevens. I think that's going to take us to the junk drawer, if there is a junk drawer. But we need to end this on a fun note.
There's a couple tweets. I don't have a junk drawer.
Oh man, that's what kind of game it is.
It's just guy. It was so infuriating. I mean, I'll read the tweets and then I have my one junk drawer comment. But this is from, again, Celtics boy. Anyone else notice that the team went downhill as soon as we got rid of Nader and Larkin? Which I think is a fantastic observation. We need Shane Larkin on this team. I don't know about Abdul Nader, but Shane Larkin was a guy who would hustle. And then. This is from Ball Movement Appreciator or Observer of Self. Tonight was bad, but here's an absolutely comprehensive list of things that went extremely well tonight. And then it's just a blank tweet. That's just a good old-fashioned being smart on the internet. What are Kyrie Irving's thoughts on the end of True Detective Season 3? I feel like it's a synopsis I need because I'm very confused. I have a lot of True Detective thoughts, but I won't share them here today. So this is from Koala Sam. The Celtics should go play laser tag to build community spirit and chemistry. It's the only way. Laser tag, bowling, maybe a pizza party, ice cream. I don't know. Whatever is going to get this team to go together. There's a lot more random junk tweets that I didn't notice during the game. It's kind of impressive. People very kind of thrilled that Brad was swearing. Funky Funk at Funky Celtics. It's time again to blame the young guys for giving me that erotic feeling. There was not a lot of eroticism tonight. And then my own junk drawer, because it was only the first quarter, is some traditional Kyle Lowry slander. Man, that guy's whiny.
He really is.
I mean, it feels bad to complain about that when and he didn't have that great a game. He's only scored 7 points, but it feels like a hollow junk drawer just when the team plays this poorly.
It's our best effort, your best effort. I put no effort into the junk drawer. That's you. So I guess when it comes to the junk drawer, I am Boston Celtics second quarters or third quarters, whichever. All right. Interesting stuff tonight. We're just as shocked as you guys are. I think that's the ultimate takeaway here. Some interesting quotes coming out of the locker room, which we'll start to read and whatever. I can't wait to see where this team goes from here. It's going to be a wild finish, that's for sure. We hope you have enjoyed this podcast, or at least enjoyed commiserating along with us. It's going to be a fun finish to the season, and hopefully the season goes past the first round of the playoffs. So stick with us if you're a new listener throughout all that. We are here for you Monday through Friday, and be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Regular subscribers, please give us that 5-star rating, good written review, please, and share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.